Can we talk something else? Can we talk about something else?
Hello. Out there. Sao Paulo, Brazil, the largest city in the Western Hemisphere, home to around 22 million people, sprawled across a metropolitan area of roughly 8,000 square kilometers, 3,000 square miles. That's comparable in sheer scale to New York City's metro, but a very different beast. Sao Paulo looks like someone stuffed New York City into a bag, shook it, and then dumped it on the ground. This incredible, bustling chaos is surrounded by jungle, a massive, smoking splat of humanity, seared right into the Mata Atlantica, the Atlantic Forest. It was in the south of Sao Paulo, a state park, not so much a place to play, but a fragile environmental preserve where the devil took a stroll. The biggest trick the devil ever pulled, they say, was convincing the world that he didn't exist. I believe it was convincing the world that there was only one of him. It was early July of 1998 when a young man, searching for a kite, ripped from his hand in the favela and carried into the foreboding forest, found what wasn't entirely unusual, the corpse of a brutalized woman. When he found another, this case finally clawed its way out of the woods. Because while crime and body dumping on the outskirts of Sao Paulo were routine, the work of a serial killer, that could sell papers. And selling things is pretty much the only racket in these parts. Welcome to Dark Topic. I'm your host, Jack Luna. This is a true crime happening. The Park Maniac. The World Cup of Soccer, or football, is a massive event that draws the attention of those across the globe, but especially in places where the sport is life. Brazil would be one such country, and it just so happened that in the summer of 98, when the so-called Park Maniac was running rampant, the defending champion Brazil team was on its own run to another championship. That is to say that nobody was paying much attention to what a few distraught women were saying had happened to them in the forest. They call it a forest, but it's a jungle in my eyes. Vines, banana trees, bamboo, not exactly the place for a hike. Even locals wouldn't venture too deep into this untracked wilderness for fear of becoming puma food or a pit viper's plaything. A so-called moto boy, one of the thousands in the city delivering packages, had been harassing young women and schoolgirls. One or two had accepted a ride and ended up in the forest being ripped at, bitten, by this strange freckle-faced ghoul who had a hard-on for sadism so strong he said it hurt. The little rat brandished a gun, though the survivors later were unsurprised to learn it had been unloaded. There was a cowardice to the park maniac. He would wilt when confronted, and that's how these survivors managed to avoid the victim list. In one incident, he had stalked a college student for days, driving off each time another student would approach until eventually getting her alone one night. He was persuasive, talkative, inquisitive, charming even. Claiming to be a photographer for a modeling agency was his angle. A perfect one in a place where the pretty girls quickly become pregnant or prostitutes and are looking for a way out. My assessment there was crude, I know, but sadly true for the more impoverished areas which the park maniac soon learned to stalk exclusively, after a few thwarted attempts from more affluent boroughs. Case in point. This student he had to kidnap at gunpoint. He sped her off on his motorbike, clutching her in front of him like a precious package, too important to risk strapping to the back. When she struggled, he'd bite her, nuzzling in as if to kiss her neck, then grabbing her by the scruff with his teeth, like a dog, which worked pretty good to keep the girl still as he sped off on his motorbike to the south of Sao Paulo and his preferred patch of forest. He brought her into the woods and raped her, viciously. The young woman later would say it was clear he meant to kill her. So when an opportunity arose to run, she took it, blindly bolting through the banana trees to safety, Fortunately, they hadn't been too deep in the jungle, so this was possible. Normally, once far enough in, unless you knew the area, you would be doomed. Running deeper into such a place was to run down its throat. Her screams had shocked the maniac. Her bravery and will to live. Going forward, not only would he target slums, but women with their heads down, less confident, easier to control. In this instance, when his victim ran away, he stood still in the bush until she disappeared down a street, then made his way to his moto, his motorbike. There would be easier prey ahead, and no one would believe her anyways. Or even if they did, he knew they wouldn't care. This was true. The police didn't bother much with the girl's report. It was World Cup time. Here's a college student out late, getting on a bike with a guy. What did she expect? Unfortunately, this was the attitude, and it prevented other survivors from coming forward as the park maniac ramped up, revved up, to murder. But before we get into that, let me make it clear that he did not go on to take only very vulnerable women or prostitutes. This was the park maniac, after all. He had issues and difficulty in sticking to a plan. Had he only targeted depressed prostitutes, as was his initial inkling, Francisco de Assis Pereira would maybe still be killing, because nobody cared, until the press made them care, and he made the mistake of becoming infamous, something he wanted. Maybe not infamous, but famous. He got it either way, mainly as a result of collecting the bodies in one area. There are many unrelated bodies to this case out there at this time and at that time. A forest surrounding a city like Sao Paulo is a custom-made dumping ground, but the way the park maniac collected victims in a territory stood out and fascinated the nation of Brazil, the continent of South America, in a way like Bundy did to the States, Paul Bernardo to Canada. The park maniac and his freckled face symbolizes murder in these parts. He even has groupies like Bundy and Bernardo, but we'll get to that. In February of 98, 18-year-old student Isadora Frankel goes missing while attending college in Sao Paulo. Unlike many of the victims, Isadora was from a family that was better off, and her father, Claudio, conducted his own investigation, as the Sao Paulo police were fucking useless. Isadora's father goes to the bank to see if his daughter had cashed any checks. She had, one with shaky handwriting from the exact time he'd lost contact with her. On the back of the check is the name Francisco de Assis Pereira, and a phone number, that for the motorcycle shop that the park maniac called home. Claudio, the father to this victim, Isadora, goes to police. They contact the shop, and the owner convinces his star employee, known as Chico in the shop, a normally filthy man with tattered clothes who recently bought new ones, along with a new jacket and helmet, to go with him to the station and figure this out. Chico, who is the park maniac, agrees. He's tired. Maybe it's time to tell his story. But when he first tries a few lies, telling police that Isadora was his girlfriend and she'd given him the check before disappearing, Chico is surprised to find that the ruse works. Carnival is in full swing and the police are spread thin. They have little interest in another missing girl. Girls are always running off with boys in Sao Paulo around this time. Chico soon leaves the station with his employer. They head out for celebratory drinks. You see, Chico, we must face these things head on. There's no need to run your whole life. Yeah, thinks Chico. Especially when no one's bothering to chase you. 18-year-old Isadora is, of course, one of the ones who have been lured, beaten, strangled, raped, and murdered by the park maniac. Her body was burned by a disgusting deviant who to this day is connected to the girl as her former boyfriend, which is a bald-faced, rather a freckle-faced, lie. Before I rattle off the remaining known murders, we have insight with a survivor report from sometime between 97 and 98, the span of the known crime line. The young woman had been propositioned by a freckle-faced moto boy to get on his bike and join a photo shoot down in the south of Sao Paulo by the zoo. This young woman, all of his targets were between 15 and 23, had been looking for a job this day. so saw this opportunity as a gift from God. Of course, it was just the opposite. Once in the woods, he transformed. That's how survivors put it. He, him, they, what, would later claim that it felt as if he'd become more compact, leopard-like, when it came to pounce on a victim. His senses, his sickness, would overwhelm him. And the attacks were always vicious, almost as if he were angry to be involved in this, helpless to be. Why would you make this possible, bitch? Why would you come to the woods with an animal like me? This survivor's name is Sandra, and she would become the face of the victims, the one brave enough to speak in front of the cameras about what had been done to her, what she managed to avoid. Once he had her in the woods and it was clear no photo shoot was to be taken, the monster came to action. He jumped her in the woods. He said that this was the path to the photo shoot. When he did this, she fought back, Sandra did, which made him hesitate. Then he grabbed her around the neck and began strangling her. He did this to the point where Sandra nearly passed out, and then he was standing over her, growling. "You see how easy I can kill you? I'm a psychopath, bitch." He points at her. "Do as I say. I've killed a lot of bitches." He points around. He looks up. He's wild-eyed, surveying the jungle. "They're everywhere. In here." He was fouler-mouthed than that, seeming to swear with every word. Sandra had to think fast. She asked if he had a condom. "No. Why would I?" "Well, maybe to protect yourself from girls like me. With HIV. This stuns the maniac. His crooked dick goes instantly limp. Hard to make such a thing happen to such a man, but she managed it. Then he hauled her to a tree, tied her hands behind her back and around the tree with her purse strap, and left, saying over his shoulder, "Don't follow me, bitch, should you get free." When Sandra eventually did, she went to the authorities, who looked at her with tired eyes and told her not to go in the woods with strange men. That was it. No follow-up until a young man looking for his kite found the bodies in the forest. Quince, everybody. This time of year, I tend to keep things a lot simpler in the kitchen. Lighter meals, fresh ingredients, and more last-minute dinners with friends. And it really makes you notice how much better everything feels when you actually love what you're using. Quince has beautiful cookware, glassware, tableware. It's all incredibly made. It looks great on the table. And it makes cooking and hosting feel easy without the luxury markup. Quince's stainless steel and ceramic nonstick cookware heats evenly and cleans easily. Perfect for quick weeknight meals or more relaxed summer hosting. Their Japanese Damascus knives are sharp and well-balanced, and their dinnerware and flatware are timeless, durable, and easy to mix into any table setting. Quince works directly with top manufacturers and cuts out the middlemen, so you're paying for quality, not brand markup. I mean, I got all my cookware from them and more. It's nice to just make a one-time purchase, and you get it at a discounted price here through Dark Topic, which I'll mention in a moment. But just get the stuff that you want and that you need, and it'll last years, and just get it done with Quince. It's not just cookware. Quince has really become a destination for elevated essentials across home, fashion, bedding, and beyond, making it easy to bring a more premium feel into everyday life. Elevate your kitchen this summer. Go to quince.com/darktopic for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/darktopic for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/darktopic. The forest body dump in Parque de Estado was a dense, secluded woodland area in the southern part of Sao Paulo, thick with vegetation and difficult to access spots that helped conceal the crimes. Bodies were found naked, face down, with legs spread, and in a cluster that shocked investigators and the public. Initially, the young man looking for his kite stumbled across one corpse. Then another body was found on July 4th of 98, about 10 meters away. This sparked the outrage. These bodies had been lying there for at least 5 days. They were going into advanced decomposition. two more bodies were located 2 days later, July 6th, roughly 2 kilometers away, and those were separated by about 1 meter. These bodies were also naked in position similarly and were more heavily decayed. Decomposition happened fast and furious in this humid forest environment. Many of the victims required clothing, jewelry, or later confessions to identify. Some remains were skeletal by the time police located them. One had been burned. I will get into more detail about these victims once the killer is caught. He will help locate even more in the brush. Survivor Sandra, who duped the maniac by posing not as a model but as an HIV carrier, is contacted once the bodies are discovered and gives a solid description of her attacker, the man who had taken her to the woods where the bodies were buried, tied her up, and knew it wouldn't matter if she got free. But now she matters, and she did follow him with her eyes. Detectives should look for a Brazilian man, dark hair, dark eyes, yes, but a scar above one eye on a bushy eyebrow, and freckles everywhere on his face, an unusual amount, like he'd stood behind a screen and had shit thrown at him. The composite sketch is excellent, as is Sandra's memory. It is circulated and soon reaches a moto shop. That's a home base for moto boys, who are delivery drivers through the city. It pops up on television. All the guys in the shop recognize their co-worker, Francisco de Assis Pereira, who coincidentally had been burning newspapers out back all morning, trying to prevent his image on the front of them from being seen locally. Chico, as he was known to friends, had gotten a haircut and had the hairdresser trim down his bushy eyebrows and make them thin. He left early that day. Nobody called in their suspicions until later. They were too distracted. Brazil had made the finals of the World Cup by this point, and it was the weekend. Chico disappeared into the crowds and was forgotten until Monday morning, when his hungover and heartbroken fellow moto boys found a note at work from Chico. France had beaten Brazil 3-0, a major letdown. And now a letdown from Chico, the note saying, "He quit. Thank you for the journey." And they're all looking at themselves like, "Hey, wait, should we call the police?" Chico is acting very suspicious, and he looks just like the sketch on the TV. Francisco de Assis Pereira soon had his photo in the papers, his real photograph, and a nationwide manhunt dedicated to him. Many people recognized him. Francisco, a.k.a. Chico Star, from his days as a night roller, that's a rollerblader, a big scene in Brazil at the time, and Chico was considered one of the best. People looked up to him. Being a night roller in Brazil and being good meant you were pretty cool. Brazil's equivalent to skateboarding. Night rollers swept through the streets of Sao Paulo, and the dudes in skin-tight spandex swept the girls up, too. Though Chico, in his later years here, early 30s, had upgraded to a motorbike and started dragging those girls into the woods. He always said he'd be famous one day. Always promised that one day, all of Brazil would know his name. Chico Star, the Park Maniac. As survivors begin coming forward, some begin receiving phone calls from the Park Maniac, who threatens to come pick them up on his motorbike for one last ride to the woods if they don't keep quiet. But they're coming out of the woodwork. It turns out that this had been going on for a long time, and there are a lot of girls, most of them not prostitutes, who had been affected by this. Authorities are embarrassed, as they should be. Finally, there is motivation to chase Francisco Pereira, a man accused and released time after time for mauling young women then claiming to be a boyfriend before posting measly bail amounts and going back to it. The press really takes hold of this story and puts Francisco's face in every newspaper, every feature story of the evening news on television. It's strange because women begin fawning over the accused. The Park Maniac is alluring to a section of the public. He's becoming a star. Chico Star is getting what he always wanted. Fame. When a half-burnt ID card is found in the clogged toilet of his former workplace, it's all but confirmed Chico is the Park Maniac. The photo is of missing 17-year-old Selma Ferreira, whose body was found along with 4 other victims in the forest, in a place only 200 meters away from where Chico once was known to stay. Selma's family receives threatening phone calls from a man who does nothing but scream obscenities. Chico then takes a bus west to Paraguay, then hitchhikes through Argentina. He He ends up back on the Brazil border on the Uruguay River. I can't say the Uruguay River without having a lisp. And he's living with a poor fishing family at this time. He lives with them for weeks, helping to catch fish. At times, he calls his family, his lawyer, from phone booths. He promises to never be caught, says that he plans to walk the earth. But after 23 days of hunting for the so-called park maniac, the press's push of his face finally makes it to even the poorest fishing villages. Chico, as he's known to the family he stays with, is called in. He's arrested without much incident, found hiding in an old shed. The baby-faced fiend is paraded in front of cameras. He wears a Boston Bruins jersey kicked down from the States and provided to him by the local jail. The B in his chest means one thing to those who see him on television. Bastardo. Chico vehemently denies the allegations. He's out on a stage like a celebrity, an athlete at a post-game presser. He enjoys himself and challenges his accusers to provide proof of his guilt. There is a red blotch in his right eye. Francisco de Assis Pereira literally has blood in his eyes. Young women, exactly his type, fall in love with him. Chico will receive mountains of mail in prison, thousands of letters from admirers, women who know exactly who he is and want him anyway. Bundy, Bernardo, Bastardo. The first doctor to see him, a woman, is left alone with Chico in his cell. She requests this as she believes it will gain his trust. Chico, though in his early 30s, looks and behaves like a shy teenager. She, like his admirers, has been duped. When the cell door closes, Chico reaches out and grabs the doctor. What if I kill you right now?
You won't kill me, Francisco. You're not crazy.
Chico lets her go, smiling. You're right. I'm not crazy. I'm just a psychopath. He then happily answers her questions. Francisco de Assis Pereira was born November 29, 1967, in Sao Paulo, Brazil. The first thing the doctor finds interesting is that he was molested by an aunt, allegedly, poor guy, and from there developed a fixation with breasts. Interesting. Highly unusual. What else, Francisco? Well, when I was a teenager, my employer sold me into prostitution, gay prostitution. I went with a goth man one day, and he almost ripped my penis off. Since then, I can't get erections without pain.
Does that make you angry, Francisco?
Call me Chico. Chico Star. And yes, it made me very angry. When bites are found on the bodies and matched to Chico, he finally begins confessing. Fuck, I bit them? Yeah, that fucks me. You found your proof. Okay, here's the truth. I'll help you find the bodies. Because her father wants her so bad, let's go get Isadora. Or what's left of her. Francisco de Assis Pereira, aka Chico, leads a camera crew and investigators through the forest directly to the burned remains of Isadora Frankel. The woodsmen who accompany the search are amazed by his knowledge of the area. His ability to accurately find not only Isadora, but others as the days go on, it's like watching a jungle cat seek out its hidden meat from previous kills. Chico, Francisco Pereira, says, "What do you expect? I'm not human. I have a demon inside me." This is all broadcast live. Isadora's father, Claudio, being interviewed on a separate channel, is interrupted by this live broadcast and watches with everyone else as his daughter's killer coldly points out her bones and talks about how he'd been unable to burn them all. It's hard to believe, but it happened. It's also hard to believe that we know all of the victims. Here is what he could remember, what he could find, what he felt safe enough to share. May 9th, 1998, 21-year-old Elisângela Francisco da Silva, a young woman from a poor family in Londrina, Paraná, had been living with her aunt in Sao Paulo since 1996. She left home that day saying she'd be back in 2 hours, A friend dropped her off at El Dorado Mall in the West Zone. She was never seen alive again. Chico approached her with his usual offer, a chance to make some money, if she'd just come with him on his motorbike. He took her to the secluded woods of Parco del Stato, raped her, and strangled her with a rope. Her naked body lay undiscovered for weeks in the humid forest. It was finally found on July 28th of 1998, badly decomposed. Identification took 3 more days of painstaking forensic work, including rehydrating a thumbprint from her right hand. Her aunt later said, quote, "I hope it was not her." It was. January 9th, 1998, 23-year-old Raquel Moda Rodriguez stepped off the train at Jacaguaro fucking station. Stepped off the train at a train station after a long day selling furniture. It was called Jabacoara Station. Something like that. She pulled out the phone and called her cousin Ligia. "I just met this guy," she said. "He wants me to pose as a model in Diadema." Ligia begged her not to go, this her cousin. It was risky, a stranger too dangerous. "Yeah, I won't." But then the phone went dead. Those were her last words her family ever heard from her. Hours later, she was in the woods with the park maniac. February 10th, Isadora Frankel, 18, a student and basketball player. Same lure. She was raped, strangled, God knows what else. Her body burned, post-mortem. The reason he burned this particular body of Isadora is because there was so much press on her because she came from a more affluent area and her father was openly looking for her and going to every media outlet that he could. Her skeletal remains, like I mentioned, were found months later after Pereira pointed out the spot. The press continues referring to her as an ex-girlfriend of Francisco, Chico Pereira. But she was not. April 17th, 98, Patricia Marino, 24, an aspiring model working as a vendor, was taken to the park, raped, strangled, and bitten multiple times in an attempted cannibalism. Chico later shared that he was considering getting into cannibalism, but had only made it to the teething stage by the time he was caught. Patricia's body was discovered on July 28, 98, in a deserted section of the park, identified by her clothing and jewelry. Next came Selma Ferreira Quirzos, 15 or 16, the youngest known victim, a drugstore clerk hoping to study accounting or computers. She disappeared while handling paperwork for someone. She was raped, beaten, strangled, and bitten on the shoulders, breasts, and legs. Her naked body, with only shoes left in some accounts, was found in the park shortly after. The same day, a fake ransom call was made to her family, trying to capitalize on the crime. This was not the park maniac. This was just some asshole trying to make some money on this. Later, Selma's burnt ID would be found in a clogged toilet of Chico's workplace. May 24th, 98, 21-year-old telephone operator Rosa Alves Neta left her home in Velo Velo, Sao Paulo, feeling down after a recent breakup. She headed to Parque Ibirapuera for a walk. There, Francisco de Assis Pereira, rollerblading through the park, spotted her. With his usual babyface charm and modeling pitch, he convinced her to go with him. It was very easy, he would later say. He drove her to the dense woods of Parque do Estado in the south of Sao Paulo. He raped her, strangled her with a ligature. Rosa's body was later found on July 9th as part of the grim cluster of victims discovered that month, naked, decomposed, after weeks in the forest. Chico, Francisco de Assis Pereira, confessed to 11 murders total, claiming a devil inside him to be truly responsible. Quote, "I was possessed by an evil force, and I am a person with a good and bad personality. Sometimes I am not able to dominate this dark side. I pray, but I cannot resist, and then I chase after women. I wish that they would not go with me down to the park, that they would run away." End quote. Sounds like victim blaming to me, Chico. Ah, well, at least he's dead, right? Surely, with the way this case was handled in such an ass-backwards way. Surely, with the way this case was handled in such an ass-backwards-sounding system and society, they tied him to a tree in the forest and let nature take its course, right? That's a big thing with translations in this case. The translator always throws right on the end of every sentence. And now I can't stop doing it. It's like almost like addictive, right? So he was executed, right? No, he was given 268 years for the crimes, but somehow is due to be released in 2028, when he'll be 60 years old. Right? No, that sounds wrong. But hey, good for you, Brazil. Very progressive of you. We like to do that here as well in Canada. Let crazy people go because they can't help that they're crazy, right? Everyone deserves a second chance, right? He was almost killed in prison back in 2000. This time his whole dick got ripped off. And no, I'm making that up. He was okay. More than okay when transferred to a safer, more secure facility following the incident. Chico has since married and looks forward to being released. Right? And that'll do it. Some shout-outs from the high-level tier on the exclusives here. Jennifer Johnson, that is my aunt's name. I wonder if that's my aunt. If not, thank you to you, Jennifer Johnson. And if it's my aunt, then give me a shout. Love talking to you, Aunt Jenny. Michael Paul Dickel. I'm not going to make any jokes about that, Michael Paul Dickel. Your name is perfectly normal, and there's nothing I can find to make fun of there. And thank you, Mike. What else? It's World Cup time right now, and a lot gets overshadowed when there's big events like this, even with, the NBA Finals happening in New York. I'm sure there's all kinds of crimes happening and things going on, but they get overshadowed by such events, and it makes you wonder what we truly care about. what's his name? Who cares? Fat Joe? Skinny Joe? All these New Yorkers fucking all over their TV screens right now. It's like, Jesus Christ, do you need more attention for fuck's sakes? Don't you get enough? What's that other guy's name? Charlemagne? I don't fucking know. Some like little kid who's a big New York Knicks fan who's apparently a celebrity. Drives me crazy to see it, but good for them. They didn't ask for the cameras to be put in their face. They just hoped that they would be. When times are busy, then things fall through the cracks. And in this case, probably 15 girls did. And now this guy's going to be released in 2028. It's not for sure, but I think probably. So keep an eye out if you can remember his name. Francisco de Assis Pereira. Chico is what he prefers to be called. Chico Star. For more Dark Topic, check out Dark Topic Plus. I just released a Dark Topic Plus episode. What was that called? That was fucking called The North Pole Killer. And before that, for Brutal, we released... you got all kinds of stuff here, by the way. Check the freezer. Check the freezer from Brutal. So if you want, go to Apple Plus and get all this stuff. If you want, go to Patreon. You can get early ad-free releases along with all this stuff and some extras at the $13 tier, like Dark Fiction. And other than that, I'll see you next time on another episode of Dark Topic. I almost did the Brutal thing at the end. That's what I always do. Until next time on another episode of Brutal. That's what Kent does that. It's really fun, and we do that every time. What do I do every time? Eyes cocked, doors locked. Stay paranoid. I'll talk to you all real soon. Big love, and thank you for listening.